Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Up the Poshcast. We are talking the night after another Peterborough United defeat. This time to Northampton Town, 2-1. Tonight we've got Ashley, we've got Max and we've got myself, John. I want to just start this podcast by saying I'm fuming. Not sure how the other lads are feeling at the minute, but I'm going to throw it straight to Max and get his thoughts on last night's shambles again.
Yeah, and I think it was a disappointing one. And I think that's a general consensus among a lot of Posh fans. I thought actually it was very similar to sort of Cambridge at home, where they flew out the traps in the first 15. And then we sort of got control. Their goal was a ridiculous one to concede. How we're not marking McGinn at the back post, I really don't know. It just seemed silly to let the man go and to score an easy goal, and that obviously puts our backs against the wall. But we got back into it and we scored just before half time. I think we scored about 37 or 38 minutes in, but it was too. I think the goal was too late. They absolutely were terrified when we scored. That was clear. They couldn't sort of build. There was nothing. We completely dominated, and the half came at a really unfortunate time, because I think if we had 10 more minutes, we would have scored a second. And we came out the half, and I don't know what Darren Ferguson had said. I don't know what they'd eaten, what they drank. They just looked flat, completely flat for the rest of the half, actually. Ricky J. Jones has to score. And I think we'll speak about that in more sort of detail, because I think if Ricky J. Jones had scored that goal from about 4 or 5 yards out and he blasted it over the stadium, if he had scored, I think we comfortably win that game, because I think it'll be a very similar story to the first half. They'll capitulate after we score. But what I will say is I still think we concede to McGinn at the end. A complete switch off at the end of the game. I think we probably deserved a point, if not all three, but I think we deserved a point, and to walk away with nothing was really unfortunate. And I think the defence have to hold their hands up yet again, which has been the story of this season. We score a lot of goals, but to not have kept a clean sheet in December is absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I really think that that's an unfortunate sort of topic. I don't know how you're feeling, Ash, about the game, but I'm definitely disappointed with the result as a whole.
Yeah, do you know what? When we first started recording these, I said that I was going to try and be as positive as I could be. And I am clinging on to any form of positivity at the moment. And it's becoming really difficult. Like you said, Max, there wasn't a month of Sundays where I thought that we should have lost that game. But as is the way and as is the familiar story of this season so far, we are just so, so sloppy at the back. We ultimately have dominated them for probably 80% of the game, and they've had two chances. I didn't think that we were bad, definitely not for the first 60 whilst Hector Cipriani was on the pitch. But you know, like, how long can it continue, and how long can you keep making these excuses? And like I said, how long can I keep trying to be positive for when ultimately it is a results business? And right now we are struggling big time. I don't know who is going to make the change, who's going to make the difference, but somebody somewhere needs to grab this starting 11, grab this squad, and that may need to be a player at this point. It might not be Fergie, it might not be Scarfy, it might not be Dale Tong, all of those sorts of backroom staff. It may just be a player that needs to just really grab this by the scruff of the neck and go, basically, what the fuck is going on at the moment? We're letting everybody down. We're letting themselves down. Like, that's what I said before, is they're letting themselves down at the moment because they're so much better than what they've dished up so far this season, and just get everybody up and get them going. But, you know, where's it going to come from?
So I'm largely in agreement with you. I thought the performance was fine, but I'm absolutely sick of watching this Peterborough United side now, and not the side. I enjoy the football that we play. I'm sick of watching our defenders failing to do the basics of their jobs. So the two goals last night, let's just go back to the game as a whole. I don't think any other side in the Football League plays like we played last night, pretty much dominates the whole game. The defence has nothing to do and we lose. I don't think any other side in the Football League this season loses that game on the play that went before our eyes. So the first goal, Jadel Katongo. Let's start singling out individuals because I'm done with being nice. Like Ash said, we talked about being positive on this podcast, but we're now 2 points off the drop zone. And frankly, it's embarrassing. We've just lost to our local rivals. So Jadel Katongo, you're from Manchester City. You're from the best academy in the country and you can't fucking mark a man from a corner. It's a disgrace. He couldn't mark him all game. And this is Cameron McGeehan we're talking about. It's not some giant. It's not Tom Eaves. It's Cameron McGeehan. You are failing as a defender if you ever think you're getting anywhere near Manchester City if you can't mark from a corner. It's under 12 stuff, right? That's the first goal done. If he does his job, tracks a runner, it doesn't go in. If he gets out-jumped by a 6'5" striker, I forgive him. To get turned and constantly get turned, the second half after that goal went in, it was happening again. It just didn't go to McGeehan from the corners. Do your job. Your job is to track a man. You should have known that from under 12. You were at City Academy. You can't tell me you've been through that academy and don't know how to mark a player from a corner. Second goal. Let's go through that as well. A nothing ball into our box. Somehow Tyler Roberts is free. Now, Manny Fernandez seemingly has no sense of danger, no sense of urgency, wants to saunter back into his box, thinking he's Virgil van Dijk, trying to be casual, trying to look cool. Why are you walking back and not getting goal side of your man? He walks back and he walks to allow Tyler Roberts to chest it and he's behind him. If he sprints, he's in front of him, right? I don't know why he wants to play so casually. You're 6'6". Play to your fucking strengths. You're not a ball player. You're a big lad in League One. Go through people, win your headers, run, block. That's what you're going to be good at. And you have a lot of positive attributes. But if you're going to wander around the pitch like I say, you're Virgil van Dijk or Paolo Maldini, you're never going to make anything of yourself. Jack Sparks is the next one I want to comment on because he was the man in front of Tyler Roberts as he chests the ball down. Now, if a striker is chesting the ball down from, you know, an awkward position, why is he not on his touch? He stands off him and allows him to pass it 5 yards to his McGeehan, who then has a tap in. Just get on his touch. It's so fucking basic. And the other one is Ryan de Havilland as well. No bravery. Just off the bench. I've watched Hector Kyprianou come on and give blood in the first half and want to carry on. I've watched Archie Collins get kicked in the head. De Havilland don't want to put his head in. Doesn't want to get hurt. You know, and I'm sick of it. You're letting the team down constantly. Why the fuck are you not embarrassed at this point? Why are you not putting your body on the line? I don't get it. I can't make sense of it. They've let the team down consistently all season. And frankly, in January now, I want them all gone and I want us to start again on that back line. Every single one of them, apart from George Nevitt, because I don't think he deserves it. The rest of them, they've had their chances. And Dornelli, again, maybe I'll forgive him as an 18-year-old kid. The rest of them, I'm done with them.
Yeah, I think the important thing with Katongo is that clearly teams are identifying that ultimately, even though we've got 2-3 massive centre-backs at the back, they are targeting the players that aren't as vertically not challenged, whatever the opposite of that is. When you think back to Bolton, De Havilland loses his man, we give away a penalty. Northampton had clearly worked on a similar sort of technique where Katongo was being blocked. He wasn't able to track the man. And ultimately, when their guy wins their header, I think from what I've seen, he's got hold of him. So it's another chance that potentially we give away another penalty. Then same thing, like we're doing these things where Manny wants to keep himself free. He's being marked by somebody. The bloke's 6'6". Stand your ground, go out and win those headers. I don't think that is too much to ask from somebody that is ultimately given a free role. At our set pieces, obviously not so much when we're attacking because it looks like the teams are doubling up and blocking, but it just seems like all of the tactical nous that we had, the defensive coaching that we saw last season and just the streetwiseness, it looks like we've completely lost it. And I don't think that the age can be an excuse with that anymore. These are people, Manny Fernandez, he didn't go out on loan last season because we decided it wasn't worth it. So that means that he's been working with Ronnie Edwards. He's been working with Josh Knight day in, day out. He was up against Johnson Clark Harris in training or on the same team of him. And we can't say that they've not learned from these people. That's the bit that's really frustrating is that, yes, the team is different, but there's got to be some learning that happened last year because, like you say, Nevitt, you can forgive it. Wallin, I can probably forgive it as well because he is new to the league, new to the team. But somebody like Manny Fernandez, somebody like Jadel Katongo, they were there last season. There is no excuse for them not to understand how we want to play, how Fergie wants to play, the team around them, who's in front of them. So Manny put in some great performances last season. He's put in some great performances this season. But the urgency, it looks like we're very slowly starting to give up, which is not what I want to see. Because we said it a few weeks back, there is nobody in this team at the moment that looks like they can drag us out of a relegation scrap. Now, the flip side of that is that if we go and win 2, 3, 4 games in sort of the next 5 or 6, we pull ourselves very clear of it. But at the moment, we're playing Crawley on Saturday, and I'm pretty sure that if we lose to them, they leapfrog us. We've lost, that means we've lost to Burton, we've lost to Northampton, we've lost to Crawley, we've drawn with Leighton Orient. So that's 4 of the teams that are below us. I'm pretty sure the only 2 teams then that we've beaten are Shrewsbury and Cambridge. And yes, you need to beat the teams around you, but I can't see us picking up points off of the top 8 at the moment. They're all just far too strong. And I like I said before we started moving on to players, I don't see who grabs it by the scruff of the neck at the moment. And that is the concerning thing.
I think I'm sick and tired of the fact that we constantly change the back line. And that is something I'm really frustrated by. The fact that last night was our 10th different formula at the back. I think it's ridiculous. How can you have a squad, a defensive squad, that can gel and that can understand each other when we're constantly changing the personnel at the back? I would much rather we play George Nevitt and Jadel Katongo at the back and allow Darren Ferguson to have that ball-playing ability at an elite level, because Nevitt's ball-playing ability is at an elite level. His defensive ability might not be, but his ball-playing is. Same with Jadel Katongo. And they will grow defensively. They will, 100%. But you have to find a back two and stick with it. Whether that's Fernandez or Wallin, whether that's Nevitt or Katongo, whether it's Fernandez and Nevitt, whether it's, you know, it goes on. We need to stick to a formula at the back and let them gel and learn. Do you think we would have been as good last season at the back if we'd constantly changed Ronnie with Fernandez or Knight with, you know, it's silly. It's really silly that we keep changing the back line. And ultimately, I think it's costing us because we can't learn how the defence plays. And last season we were so good because we played the same squad over and over and over again. And the attacking players, we've only really lost Ephraim Mason Clark. I mean, Poku, yes, is unfortunate that he's injured at the moment. I mean, he's out for 3 months. But Kean Hayes, who I'll speak about in a moment, because I think he can really come away from that performance with his head held high. You know, we've got players like that who, as Ashley, you know, Ashley said, that can't probably drag us out of relegation scrap. Technically, they probably can. But do they have the mentality to do that is the next question, which I don't think at the moment, I completely agree. I don't think they have the mentality to take us out of relegation scrap if we constantly keep shifting this team around. Look, I would rather us play the same back four and allow us to gel and to learn and to build. And we lose, you know, 4 games. But when it comes to January, you know, when the defence has gelled together and has understood how we want to play and learned Darren Ferguson's system, then I think we might get to a point where we're going to start seeing defensive solidarity, where we're starting to see, you know, our players on the pitch performing. And that's something I really want to see us go back to, is that form that we had last season. We killed teams last season by suffocating the pressure. And then when they had opportunities, counter-attacking on the break. We were, at most parts of our season, we were completely unplayable. And yes, you can talk about the fact that we had a phenomenal back line, a lot of playing high-level championship in the Premier League, you know, Josh Knight in the Bundesliga. You know, we can talk about the high-level defence that we had. But they gelled together. The squad gelled together. And we can't play the system that we want because it's the 10th time this season we've changed the back line personnel. I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
So I'm with you on one thing, Max, in the sense that I think George Nevitt should play. Ultimately, Nevitt might not be quite good enough defensively, but he's probably the best on the ball, and the rest of them are shit defensively anyway, so we might as well get the ball player in. I do have some sympathy with Ferguson over the changes in the back line. I get that it's not ideal, but he's given these players chances and they've slapped him in the face because they're not doing the basics. And stuff like last night's two goals, for instance, losing someone at a set piece, jogging back, that's not going to change from a system, if you know what I mean. It's not a tactical misunderstanding of the where their players are. It doesn't look to me like a team that doesn't know. It's not cohesive. It looks uncohesive because they're doing stupid stuff. They're not doing the basics. It's not, you know, it's not that the spacing's wrong and people are piercing through and getting one-on-ones. It doesn't look like a lack of understanding to me, if that makes sense. It looks like a lack of doing the basics. And I think Fergie's tearing his hair out, like, who can I play? Who can I get as a partnership here? Because it doesn't matter if we've played Manny and Valin. It doesn't matter if we played Manny and Katongo last night. How do you build upon that after what they're doing on the pitch? How can you say, okay, let's go again with that defence? I don't know how you do it. That's why we're making so many changes. And I don't really know what else Fergie could have done, if I'm honest, Max, this season.
And I completely agree. And I am going to say that on the record. I think we have to look at the recruitment system in the summer and we have to think, why has Darren Ferguson been, had these aspirations when he hasn't been given the defence to secure those aspirations? Because we've got the attack to secure them, we've got the attack to secure us a playoff position. But our defence is clearly, looking at the goals that we've conceded, in the relegation zone. But I just want to say, when, as the manager, do you look and you say, right, I'm sick and tired of giving you chances. I'm gonna pick four players and you're gonna play. Very similar to what he did with Joel Randle last season. I'm gonna pick you every week. And if you make a mistake, you're gonna learn from it and you're gonna continue playing, because I can't trust the rest of the players. Because that's what I feel like we need right now, is some leadership. And that's what I feel that we're lacking. And I don't know whether that's on Darren Ferguson. I don't know whether it's on the coaching staff or whether it's on the captain. But we need some leadership to take control, take the reins, just like Ashley said earlier, because it's getting ridiculous now to the point where we're constantly changing personnel to try and give people chances. Just pick the players and say, you're going to play. That's the end of it. There's no more conversation. You've got to play, and you've got to play for the, you know, for the shirt, for the badge. You've got to play with passion. And if you make mistakes along the way, we've given it our all. But you can't just hide away now. And that's what I feel like we're doing. I feel like we're hiding away.
No, I do agree. and like you say about Nevitt, if I think back to when Ronnie first came into the team in the Championship, you could probably say he wasn't ready. But he made himself ready by being a great footballer. Yes, the defensive, he had obviously Knight and Kent either side of him, so that helped. And he was great on the ball, but I think that's sort of where we are now with Nevitt, is that he needs to play. He's not had a run of games so far, so let's give him a chance. Let's just let him play his way into the team and let him play the football that we know that he can play. Because when he played against Burton, was it? He got our man of the match. Yes, it wasn't a fantastic performance and it wasn't anything to set the world alight, but it was clear to see, and all of us watching, that he is going to be a very special player. And he's sat on the bench for 19 games now, which is the most surprising thing. He's getting bits and starts. And I think that now's the time that the money that ultimately we've invested in him is going to come true and is going to show its fruits.
So it's been, I guess, a bit of a ranty podcast so far. And like we say, we do want to focus on the positives. We've always said that we don't necessarily want to go in on players, et cetera, et cetera. We don't get any joy out of doing it, but we also have to reflect what's going on the pitch. And ultimately, we're 2 points above the relegation zone now. We've just lost to our local rivals, who, let's face it, are pretty shit. And we've just lost the bottom of the league. So there's no getting away that we needed to do that. I think we had to call some individuals out. However, I want to just flip it to some positives, because despite the result, despite the form, I think there were some positives last night. And Max mentioned one earlier, and I'm going to go straight to him. Talk us through Kean Hayes' performance.
I thought it was electric. He was so good. And that's exactly what we needed when we've lost our best player, is somebody to step up. You know, exactly what we were saying earlier. Who's going to step up? And who's going to take us out of this relegation battle? And honestly, he got us off our feet last night. There were so many times where he cut inside, twisted the defence inside and out, created chances. The only bit of negativity I have is sometimes you've just got to shoot. A lot of the times he was looking for that final pass. I don't think that's a problem. You know, he was looking for the players that are proven to score. But why has Poku done so well this season? He's taken it by the scruff of the neck. And he's got that attitude, that sort of attitude that I'm going to do it myself if I have to. Very similar to the attitude that Chris Clark has, which I presume we'll talk about at some stage in this podcast. But Kean Hayes has to develop that attitude for the next 3 months, especially until Poku comes back. And you know, if he's going to continue that form, maybe we can build a system that can involve him and Poku, because both of them are really, really good at making defenders worry. And that's something that we had with Ephraim Mason-Clark last season. And part of the reason why we were so successful was because you can train all you like. When Ephraim Mason-Clark standing down, you know, right in front of you, all that training sort of goes out the window. And you and in the end, you dive in and make a silly tackle. And you either get booking or you get sent. And that was the option that we had, especially pre-January Mason-Clark last season. And that's what I feel Hayes can easily develop into. When he came, the Fleetwood fans sort of said very similar things. He just needs a manager to believe in him. And clearly Darren Ferguson does, because he gave him a massive opportunity to fill Poku's boots with how good he has been. And I thought he put on an excellent display. He just needs to find that element of, when do I hit it? When do I find that final ball? And that will come with experience. And if he's going to be our starting on that side until Poku comes back, then I am not worried in the slightest about losing Poku. And I tweeted that the other day. I think he can. We will miss Poku, don't get me wrong. But he's an excellent alternative. And if he can sort of nail the few nuances that he's struggling with at the moment, which will come with experience, I think we've got a real player and someone that can easily help us out of this relegation battle.
Yeah, I completely agree. I really, really do like Kean Hayes, and I like sort of everything that he looks like he stands for as a footballer. When we discussed last week, you want those players that are going to bust a gut. You want those players that are going to run for 90 minutes in sometimes. And ultimately, sometimes that's what posh fans really like. I do think, like you say, Max, is that there is some work to do on his final decision, whether that be the pass, the cross, or the shot. But again, just to sort of reiterate what you say, that is something that only comes with game time and understanding where your teammates are, understanding where the opposition may be, where the keeper is, where the goal is. And you can't learn that overnight. And to come in with, let's probably say, sort of like 5 days training to become a starter, I think that he put in an absolutely fantastic display. And I am ultimately delighted that he's starting to show himself, because when he's had the chance even in pre-season, when I think back to Spalding, he busted a gut at the back post, nearly knocked himself out going into the post. That's the guts and that's the desire that you want to see, isn't it, from your players? And just to sort of, again, like I said, grab the game by the scruff of the neck and just take it to the opposition. And Kean Hayes is going to be that player, which is great to see.
Yeah, echo all your thoughts on Kean Hayes. There was a couple of other players who are maybe even three actually. One just very quickly was Joel Randall, who I've been very critical of on this podcast. I thought he knitted play together pretty well second half, to be honest. I thought he had a decent game. The other one, and we're talking about leaders coming through, and one player I am seeing a little bit of that from is Malik Mothersill. I really did think last night, in the absence of Poku, he was that ball-carrying threat. It didn't all come off for him, and he doesn't quite have the quality of Kwame Poku at the minute. But I've seen against Burn, and I saw last night, he was the one that was up and at them, and constantly up and at them. He got his goal. It was a tap-in, but he got his goal that was merited. And yeah, there was a little bit of untidiness around the box, I guess you could say. And some people will say, oh, he was a little bit too selfish. But what I really like about Malik Mothersill is he'll just keep going back for more. Just keep going back for more. Keep running at his man. A really talented player, and I really do think he is stepping into that leadership mold a little bit. Ash, did you want to say something on Malik? I know we're big fans of him.
Yeah, of course. Look, people will accuse us of being biased, being sort of one-sided and stuff like that. But again, it's another good Malik Mothersill performance. Like you say, it didn't always work. It wasn't always fantastic, and sometimes it was the wrong decision that he made. But you do always need that player that is going to be selfish sometimes and make something out of nothing. Going back to obviously Joel Randle, look, we've not been the nicest. Our ratings haven't been the fairest sometimes, maybe, let's say. But yesterday, he did the hard work. When players were out of position, he was busting a gut to get back. And I love that. Despite what you think about the player, whether you think he does the right thing, the wrong thing, the least you can do is bust a gut to comment and help your team out when they're out of position, ultimately, because that's what it comes down to, is that we will find ourselves out of position. We will find players out of position. And Joe Randle showed that last night, showed that bit of sort of, yeah, look, I'm not going to go down without a fight. And equally, some of the passages of play that we had, obviously, if we're going to talk about that Ricky miss, Joe Randle was key to that. He puts it on a plate for Ricky, and look, it bobbled. But at the end of the day, the ball should hit the back of the net. Look, it did bobble. We all know that, but there's no excuses for that bobble. The ball should be hitting the back of the net every day of the week. And Ricky will know that, won't he? I don't think that we need to divulge too much into that one. That's not avoiding the point, but the bloke knows that the ball should have been hitting the back of the net in that circumstance, that's for sure.
I think another massive positive was seeing Hector Kitpriano and Archie Collins play football together again. And I thought, I just thought it was such a breath of fresh air that I have missed. Hector Kitpriano definitely had a slow start to this season. And I don't think anybody will say that he was at his last season levels. Last night, he was really, really good. And ultimately, that's what we need, is players like that to again, you know, drag us out of the situation that we're in. X is only going to improve as well. That was his first game back after his injury, I presume we'll be able to get the 90, 89 minutes out of him again very soon. But that partnership is so key to this squad. Hex's defensive capabilities and Archie's ability to spray the ball. A lot of the time, I was getting really sick of the sideways pass, and Archie would get the ball and put it on a plate for Kean Hayes from deep, all the way out onto the flank. And he did that on a number of occasions where the fullbacks couldn't deal with it. And that is something that I don't think he's really been able to do with De Havilland, because maybe there isn't a level of defensive security. But I think them playing together, they work off each other so well. And having Randle in front of them, we all know how good Archie Collins and Joel Randle's partnership is. As a sort of midfield three, I do think it's one of the stronger midfield threes in the league. And I think that's going to be really imperative for us going forward. But I do feel a little bit bad for De Havilland, because I do think he's been quite good. You can't keep Hector Kitpriano on form out of this squad. And honestly, I was so happy to see him back last night. And that's going to be a massive positive for us with players sort of getting injured now, obviously losing Kwame Poku. We're getting some of our best players back from injury that we've been missing. I think that's, you know, we might lose some, but gaining some at the same time is really good. And Hector Kitpriano, you know, our captain, is a massive positive to have back in the squad.
Yeah, I've really missed watching Hector Kitpriano play football. And I think the sort of, you saw the negative impact they had when he went off the pitch and De Havilland came on. I don't think it's been harsh to drop De Havilland. I'm probably the most critical member of this podcast of De Havilland, who I think is pretty much Mr. Invisible at this point. Don't really see what he offers. But Kitpriano coming back just oozes quality. Him and Collins are just a brilliant pairing. And I mean, this is hard to say because of the way we've been playing, but I am relatively confident that we don't get in too much relegation trouble because we've got Kitpriano and Collins sitting in front of that defence. I think Kitpriano being back is massive. And ultimately, look, we've been angry. I think the collective mood among the fan base is angry. If Ricky does score that chance, and I could have gone in on Ricky, but I think he's got credit in the bank. If he scores it, we win. And on another night, the way the game played out, we should have won that game. You can kind of say it's misfortune in the sense that they scored literally both their chances. You can kind of blame the defense, but on the balance of play, we should have won that football match. And if we had, we would have all been a lot cheerier on this podcast. So let's hope that going into Crawley, we get a similar level of performance, I guess, and a better result. We will look at the Crawley game towards the end of this episode. At the time being, we asked for some questions on our Twitter account. Now, Ashley is our Twitter maestro, blue tick himself, pays Elon Musk for the privilege. So Ash is going to lead the way with some of your questions because we asked for them before this podcast. So Ash, take the floor. What questions have we had in?
Yeah, look, I am an engagement whore, an engagement master, and this was great fun, as were our ratings. So first question for the floor is from Tobba. So with our performances recently, do you see there being a dip in our attendances, both home and away?
I think we've already seen a sort of dip, and we've seen sort of desperate attempts from the marketing team to sort of get bums on seats. And I think that's probably a little bit unfortunate. I think sticking behind the team in a time of turmoil and in a time of difficulty is the best thing we can do, and we shouldn't really be shying away. But by the same extension, you know, when we're playing this bad, nobody wants to go and see a team lose every week. It's really difficult. So I can see why. But yes, I do see a dip, and I think that's a natural dip. I think when teams go on really bad runs of form, there are certain fans that sort of just say, why am I going to go and waste my Saturday? And I think that's a really unfortunate mindset to sort of have. But there's always a certain outcrop that won't show up because the form's not brilliant. And I don't think there's a lot that people can really do about that.
Yeah, look, I think the Saturday's going to be a low one. I think that sort of the wave is definitely tumbling down. When you look at, obviously, our ticket prices, they're not the cheapest, probably the higher end for anything outside of London. And ultimately, 2 weeks before Christmas, that is going to have a massive negative impact on our attendances alongside their performances. Max, I know that you said that obviously the marketing team have worked hard, but ultimately there's only so much you can do to push what is a poor product at the moment. There's only so long that you can ride off the back of beating your rival 6-1 when you then go and lose to the next rival 2-1, it doesn't really have a great deal of weight anymore. So yeah, I do think that probably the attendance will dip for Crawley, but then Stockport away on a Friday night, we were never going to probably take a fantastic following to Stockport anyway, even at the weekend the allocation isn't great. Then when I think about the two games between Christmas and New Year, I think that we'll probably see 10,000 there. Mansfield will bring a good following. Obviously the GH is open for the Mansfield game. I believe it's open for the Barnsley game as well. So that naturally brings in more punters and more people. So that'll be interesting. Then obviously then three back-to-back away games to start the year. Burton, I think that will be terrible. Wrexham will sell out because everybody will want to go to Wrexham. And then obviously Everton on a Thursday night. So that will be interesting. I do think that we'll still take probably 2,500, 3,000 to Everton because there will be that interest. And who knows, there may be a load of Liverpool fans in the away end. So on to the next question. It's from Matt PUFC. He is asking whether he thinks it's worth just cutting Randall, Ricky Jade Jones, Poku and Hector in January. I assume that means to transfer them and instead keeping until the summer and just taking this season to embed new players like Hayes and Conclark to hit the 25-26 season running. He reckons that if we got rid of those four and sold them on and made some money, that we would still stay up. John, your thoughts?
Matt PUFC, you're a braver man than me. I think in an ideal scenario, if you're in sort of mid-table and looking very comfortable, you may choose to do that and talk of it as a development season. But we've got a 2-point gap to the relegation zone. If you take arguably the four best players of the squad out of it and sell them, I don't know that we stay up if you do that. I really don't. I really struggle to see that much quality beneath them to sort of warrant doing that. I think it would be a massively risky strategy. And more than that, look, the fans are angry at Darragh at the minute. We're very much Darragh in. We spoke about it in the last podcast. If Darragh went and sold our four best players in January, I think there would be those silly protests that people are talking about. So I can't see us doing that. I think one might go. I can't see all four going. And I don't think we're in a position where we've got that luxury to even consider it, to be quite honest with you.
No, I do agree. I would be concerned. Like, yes, we have the squad depth, but we've already seen, do we have the people that can win games? And sometimes when two or three of those players have dropped out and not been in the team, we've shown that we don't have that luxury. Yes, Hayes is an exciting player. Con Clark's an exciting player. But I think that now is probably the time to go with the tried and tested, which sort of does lead me on to my next question, which is from Fleetwood Zach, who wants to know if there's any logical reason why Chris Con Clark has only been getting literal seconds on the pitch when it's quite clear that there's every chance he could improve us going forwards. Obviously, bringing him on for 1 minute last night still absolutely baffles me. And he's put a screenshot of a graphic that basically shows in the last five games, he has played a total of 11 minutes, which I don't think includes extra time. But that gives a good indicator of how little he is playing.
It's because Joe Randle plays football. And that's really the answer to the question. Joe Randle has been, you know, sort of stand out in certain games this season. Yes, there's a level of inconsistency. And yes, I sound like a broken record. I do it every week. But Chris Con Clark, I am really looking forward to seeing. And I do want to give him a run of games. But as of right now, when we're in a relegation scrap, is trying and testing new things really sensible? I don't really think so. And that was the narrative I sort of said last week when we were discussing whether we want Chris Con Clark or Joe Randle. It was always Joe Randle because he's trying and testing new things at this point in the season when we're 2 points off the relegation zone overly smart. I don't really think so. And Joe Randle again proved last night why he's an imperative member of this team. And unfortunately, we've signed Chris Con Clark, I think, to sort of be a backup to Randle and sort of have a different option coming off the bench when you sort of like Randle doesn't work. But more times than not, Randle has worked this season and he's worked really hard. So I think that's why Chris Con Clark is struggling for games. Last night, I definitely would have substituted and brought Chris Con Clark on earlier. We've talked about that sort of like maverick attitude that Chris Con Clark has. And I probably would have brought him on a little bit earlier. But I wouldn't have taken Randle off. I would have taken another player off and sort of play a different system with Chris Con Clark. But I think there definitely needs to be some sort of like thought process behind how we involve Chris Con Clark more. But it's not in replace of Randle because I think Randle has been excellent.
I'm not sure that I would have. I agree that I would have been bringing on Chris Con Clark yesterday. Like we sort of mentioned it, I think in the group chat, is that ultimately we didn't really do a great deal wrong last night. It becomes down to the defensive lapse and the lapse in concentration that we concede a goal in, what, the 86th minute? Ultimately, then, I know that Fergie looks like a bit of a fool making subs after that, but there was nothing wrong. There was no reason to make any changes. We looked a threat the whole way through the second half. Yes, that threat weakened when Hector went off the pitch, but that I didn't see a need to change the game. I had confidence in Ricky Randle, Malik and Kean Hayes on the right to score a goal. It just didn't come off. And sometimes that is the way that it's going to be. Next question is Aaron Knighton. This one, it's a tough one, isn't it? Thoughts on injury time. Is there a solution to get it correct? Past two games have had 3 minutes added in the 90th with the amount of subs and time wasting going on. This doesn't seem right. I think I'd probably like to tackle that one first. I think that the sooner that football moves to a rugby-style clock, the better. I don't know how controversial that is. Cut the halves down to 30 minutes. That's what average game time is, like 58 minutes, is it, at the moment? The sooner that football moves to a 30-minute half, you can and every time the ball goes out, I think that you stop the clock. You have an external timer, somebody that is literally sat there like they do in chess, then they'll whack the button and stop the timer. You have somebody there that stops the clock and starts the clock every time that the ball goes out of play. That reduces the time wasting because, well, the clock stopped. You cannot time waste it anymore. Yes, that would maybe drag the games on for probably closer to 2 hours, but the ball in play and the ball needs to be in play. And that's the important thing, is that we talk about entertainment, we talk about the product that's being sold. For me, if I know that I'm getting 60 minutes of football, then fantastic. And yes, you get to the point where, you know, you kick it out of play and all of that sort of stuff. But that's the benefit that you have, is that you know that when that attack is over, the attack is over, ultimately. And I think that that's probably one thing that football could learn from rugby. So next up is from DJ_PUFC. Is the solution a new ground, which would generate more income and stop us having to do fire sales and rebuild every year?
Well, I mean, it would be lovely if we could have a new ground. I think the club have been trying, have they not? The council's got in the way, really. However, that's the way the club have presented it. It's. I don't think it's as simple as we'll have a new ground, we'll build one. It's finding the right land. It's finding the right space. It's dealing with any protests from Peterborough residents who don't want that land used for a stadium. A new stadium would be great. I'm sure we'd increase attendances. And I'm sure, as Dara has said many a time, if we get 15,000 a week, we'd start paying bigger wages. But it's not Football Manager. It's not that easy. There are a lot more obstacles that get in the way of just saying, oh, let's get a new stadium. I don't really know what else there is to say on that one, really.
No, look, I do agree with you, John. I think that, like we say, the club does do really good things in growing the fan base. Obviously, we've gone from 200 junior posh members to 1,200 junior posh members, much to somebody surprised in the marketing department. But, you know, what way to get more people in is that ultimately you need to get rid of some of the shoddy stands that we've got. And if that does mean that it needs to be a new ground, then so be it. Next question, which sort of does recap on, well, probably two questions. I can join them together. We've got Dale Routledge, who has asked, what's happened to Katongo? Was he carried last season by Knight and is now getting exposed? Max, what are your thoughts?
Well, to John's dismay, and I'll probably catch a pelter in a moment, I don't think Katongo has been awful. And I think maybe defensively he's been a little bit naive, but we have to remember that he was playing right back last season. He wasn't playing centre back. We need a ball playing centre back, and that's what Darren Ferguson is sort of relying on. So it's sort of a new position in this squad. He was there last season, and he should be doing better. I'm not going to disagree. But you know, Katongo's playing two different positions for two different squads in a very weak defence. You know, maybe he was carried by Josh Knight and Ronnie Edwards last season. Maybe that defensive security did sort of help his game. But he'll step up. I've got no doubt about that. You know, I wouldn't send him back. I think that John made that, said that earlier, that you know he'd send a lot of the loanees back and sort of reset. I wouldn't. I'd keep Katongo. I'm really happy with him. I think he will come alive when this defence gets better, and it will, I think, I hope. But I think he's probably one of the guys that I wouldn't want to sell or send back, because as I've said previously, you know, we need a strip back four that we stick to and kind of learn to play with each other. So I don't necessarily think Katongo's been bad. I just think it's a different defensive structure. And I think, yeah, I probably do think there was the support of Ronnie and Knight. But you could say the same about sort of anyone, you know, defensively. We don't have Ronnie and Knight centre back anymore. So when Jadeo has to play in a different position, it's going to take him a while to learn that. And we saw that last season. I do want to make that clear before I shut up. I do want to make that clear. Last season, when Chiesa left, his opportunity came right back. And the general consensus was he was a bit rubbish. He came alive and ended the season one of our best players. So you just got to give him that time, I think. And you know, he's just come back from injury. There's a lot of excuses I can make for him. But I do think give him the time and we will reap the rewards.
So my head was going a bit earlier and I probably spoke a little bit out of turn. Maybe I wouldn't send Katongo back. But I do think he's been terrible since he's coming on loan and massively disappointed me in terms of the quality that he had. I think the easy thing to do now is go, well, he was carried by his teammates last season. But I don't necessarily think that was the case, because I think he was genuinely a good player in his own right last season. He wasn't the attacking fullback of Chiesa, but I think we all saw his quality on the ball. I think he did a very credible job at right back, and the theory was that he'd come in as centre back and be even better in his actual position, right? That hasn't transpired yet. And like Max says, I think hopefully a lot of that is down to the fact that he's a bit rusty. He didn't really have much of a pre-season. He then got injured. It's all been a bit stop-start. However, he really needs to up his performance levels, because that accusation that he was covered will stick if he doesn't improve. I think Katongo has the ability to improve. I do believe that. And like I said, when I said rip up the defence, maybe Katongo is one that I probably would stick by. However, the only counteract to that I would say is, I think if Katongo had joined this summer, he would be in the Sam Curtis boat of, why the fuck have we signed him? He's been that bad for me. But we've all seen his body of work before, so we give him a bit more time, a bit more reprieve. And that's fair enough, because he was good last season. So, no, I do think Jadeo Katongo can be a good player. I saw it last season. I don't think the fact that Knight, Edwards and Burrows were alongside him covered for his deficiencies. I think he's a good player in his own right. I really hope we see it again this season soon.
Yeah, I think similar to what John said, and obviously we mentioned earlier on Ricky's miss, is that sometimes you players can put themselves into credit, can't they? And I think that that's probably where Katongo is. And I think that maybe, just maybe, that's part of the issue this season, is that a lot of the players at the back are so new and so fresh that they haven't built that rapport with the fans. They haven't built that relationship with each other. And ultimately, they don't have a great deal of credit in the bank. Even somebody like Bilo, even somebody like Jed Steer, they are on a level balance on zero, and people aren't going to be very forgiving, especially not when we're in December and not keeping clean sheets. That does sort of link on, and I don't want to beat a dead horse type thing. Joachim Carlson asked, is there any defensive coaching going on at all? While I think it looks like we need an experienced centre-back with authority, Manny looks like he has some sort of free role at the back. It's not working. I don't know if either of you have got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's very easy to point the fingers at the coaches, and I kind of get it because we do look... I don't even know that we do look that open. It's such basic things. Like, I shouldn't need to coach Jadel Katongo how to mark from a corner, right? You learn that under 12s. I shouldn't need to coach Manny Fernandez to get goal side of a striker when he's got the ball at his feet 10 yards from goal. I don't know how you coach that. There's only so much of the real basics that you can learn, is there not? It's not... I don't necessarily think it's a coaching issue. It's not like I'm seeing Posh picked apart. I actually think the tactical transitions and the patterns of play that we work out of defence and the fullbacks going in and the wingers going wide, et cetera, et cetera. It's all really well drilled on the training ground. So as easy as it is to go, oh, it must be the coaches. How do you coach that? Because it's so basic that I genuinely don't think I need to tell a professional footballer how to mark from a corner. Like, it should be ingrained in you at 21. It should be ingrained in you at 14 if you're in an academy system, quite frankly. But so I don't know. I don't know. I think it's very easy to blame the coach, and everyone looks towards the coaches at times. But for me, it's not a gapping issue in the defence where we're getting punctured by the same pass through our defence or whatever. It's just basic errors that the players should know better than to do.
We don't know what's going on at the training ground, and I do want to make that clear before I say what I'm going to say. But if it's a basics problem, I think the coaches definitely have an element of responsibility. The coaches should be grabbing the players by the scruff of the neck and going like, "What on earth are you doing? This is simple stuff you're getting wrong," and give them sort of ways to implement improvements, because I don't think that we're going to improve if the basics are wrong. And I don't disagree, John. I actually think that the tactical style of play and the systematic sort of transitional aspects of it are relatively good. I don't think we get picked apart often, but there is times that we do. And I think that's a personnel problem more than a coach problem. So I agree with that. But when you talk about the basics should be an easy fix. It's December. We haven't kept a clean sheet. So it's clearly more of a deep-rooted problem than it just being a lack of knowledge of the basics. And I think the coaching staff and the players both have to take equal responsibility to the fact that they haven't got it right. And they've now got how many days for the January transfer window to get it right and hopefully see a clean sheet, which I would be over the moon with.
Yeah, I think it's important to note as well that it's very easy to coach a defence in a low block, sort of not Wickham this season, but let's talk of a traditional Wickham team where, you know, you're packing the box and you sort of have that 4-4-2 shape and you get all men behind the ball. Posh don't do that. So it's a lot more difficult to coach a team that want to play on the front foot. We keep men high. We do leave our fullbacks 1v1 a lot. We do ask a lot of our defenders. So what we're coaching is more advanced. And the fact that we haven't kept a clean sheet is really, really poor, and it doesn't reflect well on the management staff. But Fergie wants to play attacking football. And by being the top scorers in the league, or I think we might be the second top scorers now, we do take risk at the back. So, you know, part of that is how much attacking quality do you take away if you go, okay, let's go really defensive now. And I'd rather I'm kind of a believer in the system. I still am, even though the struggles that we had. I want us to play like this. I just want the stupid errors to be ironed out.
Exactly that. And the final point that I will make on sort of the coaching is that it's very clear that we coach repetition and we coach the same thing and the guys do the same drills. And like we've said, is that at some point the players need to take ownership for themselves. I don't think that there should be any sort of finger pointing. There's lots of talk, and that will take me on to the next question of, well, would it be nice to see a plan B? I don't want to see a plan B. I want to see plan A work. I don't care how long that takes. I don't care whether that takes us another 3 months. I like scoring 4 or 5 goals a game. I don't like conceding 3 or 4 goals a game and losing games, but I like what I see. I like watching us dominate the ball. If you have the ball, you can't concede. And it's just those momentary lapses in concentration where the guys are just switching off that is costing us week in, week out at the moment. At some point, they'll wake up and everything will be rosy again.
I completely agree with the plan A. I want to see a plan A work. And plan A will work, and I'm confident with that. You know, it is going to come alive, especially when we get the personnel right, especially when the players realise that, you know, they've got to sort of take the onus on themselves. I said last week, I am probably an advocate for a plan B. And the reason why I am is because last season we had a very good plan B, which was lump balls into Jono. And it completely changed what teams had sort of worked against. And it worked quite a lot. I think we saw that at Burton away, especially. Jono came on and changed the game. And I think that's really important, is that there is an element where we can have a plan B. To have another option, I don't think, is a bad thing. To change the way we play if it's not working. I would much rather that than Fergie do it on the fly, because I think we've seen that a lot this season where his system's not working and he's put players in silly positions, and it's ended up costing us more this season anyway. It's ended up costing us more than it's benefited us. So I think that's a really key thing, is that, and it also is a bit of a pedantic thing as well. Like, if we don't have a plan B, I'm not going to like sit here and get upset about it. But I think there's definitely an avenue that we could take, especially with Chris Conn-Clarke, because that looks like the man that we want to bring off the bench at times, where we can implement him and build a system around him, because that's clearly what he really wants, is a system built around him, to have a second plan, to have a second option with him at the forefront of it. I think A, that would do him a world of confidence, and B, it would give us something that teams don't necessarily train to defend against.
I just want to jump in real quick and say, I don't mind a plan B. What I don't like about Posh's plan B at the minute is, and I think we have mentioned this before, is that it very much looks very muddled. Fergie's plan B is, I'm going to chuck all the attackers on and there's going to be no real shape to our team, and we're just going to hope that someone produces a moment of magic. If we're going to have a plan B, I want it to be thought out. I want it to look as well-trained as our plan A, which it never does. So at the minute, I think our best strategy is like what Ash said, plan A, do plan A better.
Yeah, so last two questions, that one. So that one was partly from Matthew Lord. He ultimately asked if we're Fergie and he's a great manager, and are we not interested in seeing something else, somebody else at the helm, someone with a plan B? I think we've covered that. And then the first part of his question, which was more of a statement, and we'll lead on to Crawley predictions, is he's asked us to stop predicting that we win, and especially win by a lot, because every time we end up losing. So we will maybe cover that one at the end with some Crawley predictions, but I make no promises. And then the other part, just to sort of finish off and say Matt POFC, which obviously we'll cover with Crawley, is that we've got 4 games left this year, 12 points available. How many do you think that we'll get? Which does take us nicely onto Crawley, I think. And I don't know where to start. I guess we start with probably, is there any changes that anybody wants to make with the starting 11 for Crawley?
Yeah, I would bring George Nevitt in. I think I would play him alongside Manny Fernandez. It is really slim pickings at the back. And that second centre-back, I'm tempted. You could say any one of them. I'm not sure any one of them deserves it at this point. Katongo, Valin, Fernandez. I think you can make arguments for any of them starting or any of them being dropped. Outside of that, I think I'd go with exactly the same team again. I think we're pretty much close to that being our strongest lineup. I don't think there's too many positions up for dispute. Conn-Clarke for Randall was one that I was appealing for before Northampton. Like I say, I think Randall played relatively well last night. I think he And I'm a fair man. If you play well, you can keep your place. And Randall did enough to keep his place. That place is very much under threat, though. Max was clapping me as I said that. And I just want to caveat it with the fact that that place remains under threat. But certainly for this week, I would leave Joel Randall in the scene.
I just want to say, and it is probably a bit of a systematic thing, and I have said it earlier on, I play Katongo and Nevitt at the back against Crawley. I think we can really punish them by suffocating the pressure. And I think this, there is no better game than a newly promoted, you know, League Two side, which I don't think is a bad side. Even though, you know, they probably are below, they are below us at the moment. I don't think they're necessarily an awful side, but I think we're really going to harm them by dominating the possession. I don't want to see misplaced passes. That's not what I want to see. If, you know, Bilo rolled out to Katongo, let Katongo and Nevitt do their own thing. And I think that is a key thing, especially having Kyprianou, who, we'll lose height when we're defending set pieces. But we didn't have a tall back line last year, and we did just fine, I think, defensively. So that ball playing ability, that dominating the pressure, that, you know, exactly what we had last season with Knight and Ronnie, that's the closest we're going to get, the closest centre-back duo we're going to get to having that sort of level of ball playing ability, having that, you know, pass rated percentage be close to the 90s, in the 90s in some games. Play those two, see if it works. And if it doesn't, I'll hold my hands up and say, you know, I apologise. But seriously, those two together, we could really harm Crawley by just dominating that pressure and making them press relentlessly. And it would just be so good. It'd just be so good.
Play those two, see if it works. If it doesn't, change it for the 11th time this season, basically. I don't disagree, Max. I think that my only concern, and this is, it's a stretch, is that I do think that we would miss money in both boxes from set pieces. I do think that Bilo was very good claiming the ball yesterday when they were literally sticking them right on him in difficult testing conditions. But I like it when money scores goals from corners. I feel like every time that we can actually get the ball up off the floor, that we're a little bit of a threat from set pieces, which I've never really felt probably since the Mark Beavers days. So it's that. But then I also would like Katongo to play, and I really don't want to drop Dornelli. I think that, like you say, is that at the end of the season, Dornelli is going to be our starting right back for next season. So let's just stick with him. Like, even if sometimes he's not fantastic, sometimes he's not great, his decision making isn't fantastic. But ultimately, he's busted gut to get into a great position yesterday and cut the ball across and contributed to our goal. So if it is Katongo that has to drop out to keep Manny and Nevitt together, I would say that that's probably what we do. But equally, I'm with you, Max, in that Katongo and Nevitt's probably the only combination that we haven't tried yet. So it's probably the one that we need to go with and hope that it works. And as the rest of you all said, I think that the front six sort of picks itself now.
I think just coming back on Manny Fernandez quickly before we move on. I want to praise Manny Fernandez again because I don't do it enough. But his ability to carry the ball, we saw that yesterday. Defenses do struggle with that, and he sort of goes on these runs that we saw Ronnie Edwards do last season. These runs into midfield and usually into their final third, which I am really fond of. However, we do lose an element in possession, so it's what you want, I think. If you want a threat from set pieces and more defensive security from set pieces, I pick Manny and Nevitt. For me, I think we're going to really dominate possession with Katongo and Nevitt. And yes, it might be the 11th centre-back duo or defensive combination that we haven't tried yet. But I think it probably will be our best one. And I think we'd see that if both are given the opportunity. And to be quite frank, I'm actually relatively surprised it's taken us until December to try the two of them, considering how good we know Nevitt and Katongo are on the ball, that we haven't given them a go together. And I think Crawley's a perfect opportunity to do that. I'm not saying it's a free hit, because no game is a free hit, but it's definitely a game that we can try and test, not like the next three where you've got Mansfield, Stockport and Barnsley, and three games are going to be huge. So look, that's why I try them, and yeah, we'll have to wait and see what the team sheet says on Saturday.
Well, with that, We will move on to those predictions. We'll just so I'm out of this, I predicted 1-1 at Northampton. I am not one of the serial 6-0ers. You know, I try and base my, despite the abuse of my podcast members, for those of you not watching, I'm getting some abuse here. I try and base my predictions around some sensibility and not just to provide controversy. But we play Crawley, and Crawley, much like ourselves, you might say, aren't very good. So let's find out if Ash and Max think we're going to batter them. Ash, are we going to beat Crawley? What's the score going to be? And to answer back to the question, how many points are we going to get from our next four games?
Do you know, the reason that I predict that we're going to batter people every week is because at some point it's just got to click, hasn't it? And like it did against Cambridge, it just clicked and it just worked. And when I think back to Cambridge, it was a 6-1, wasn't it? So I'm not going to be that confident, but I'm still going to go with a 5-1 because we will concede. I think I predicted 5-1 multiple times for yesterday's result. And I think that if Ricky put the ball in the back of net yesterday, it probably would have ended up 5-1, maybe 5-2, because Max is confident that they would have scored again. As for the rest of the year, I'm going to go with a stupidly confident 9 points in that we're going to win all of the home games and lose at Stockport, you know, for a laugh.
I mean, I wish I had your confidence, Ash. Although, I actually do think we're going to win. I do think we're going to win this one. I think, performance-wise, take Burton out of it. I don't think the performances have been that bad. Crawley aren't that good. I'm going to go 3-1, Posh. I think we should have too much attacking quality for them. If we lose this one, we're in big, big trouble. I will say that. We're in big trouble as it is, but we are in serious trouble if we lose this one. I think on the topic of the four games coming up, Sam, with 3 points at the weekend, we're going to lose Stockport away. I just can't see us getting any points there. I think we'll draw with Barnsley. I think we'll win the other one against Mansfield because they've got Christy Pym in goal, and we'll chip him.
So I've decided that if I predict clean sheets, one day it's going to happen. So I'm going to predict a 4-0 win. Is what I'm going to predict. And again, similar to Ash, I'm so ending up on a fan forum, but similar to Ash, I think the attack has to click, and I'm basing my prediction off the fact we start Katongo and Nevitt, and it's the best centre-back duo we've ever seen. But look, again, in terms of the next couple of games, I was gonna say we beat Crawley, and then do we win another game? I don't know. But I think we'll definitely, I think losing to Stockport is on the cards. I think I'll say a draw against Mansfield, a draw against Barnsley. So I'm going to say 5 points for the rest of the year.
Well, nice to know we're all positive about the fact Posh are going to ruin everyone's Christmas by losing the last game before Christmas quite heavily. But, you know, that's 3 wins out of 3. So we are still positive here on Up the Poshcast. And with that, I think that's everything. We'll be back again next week. Please be a cheerier podcast. We just want to talk about the positives again. Please, Posh, just get a bloody win. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
There's nothing I'd love more than that little T-Rex dwarf, Christy Pym, to come to the fucking Western Homes and lose 3-0 with all three dinks going over his head and Bilo running down the other end and just celebrate with a knee slide in front of him.